The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we are tackling Parenting Your Teenager, with guest expert Dr. Harris Feinstein. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. And as I mentioned today, Parenting Your Teenager. Harris, it's good to see you here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Harris has been with us now. He gave the Parenting Your Teenager seminar at our big annual event in March. And I must say, I received a number of compliments on your behalf for the quality job you did. So it was great to have you here today for the radio program.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Harris Feinstein is a child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist who has been in private practice in Tampa since 1988. He also provides psychiatric services to college students at the USF Counseling Center. He works with individuals, couples, and families. He has a special interest in psychotherapy. He is triple boarded in pediatrics, adult psychiatry, and child and adolescent psychiatry. Dr. Feinstein has been an assistant director to the adolescent unit at the USF Psychiatry Center, a co-director to the adolescent unit at Northside Mental Health Center, and president of the medical staff at Bay Harbor, a residential psychiatric center for children and adolescents in Largo, Florida, in the 1990s. Dr. Feinstein provided child, adolescent, and adult psychiatric services for 19 years to clients at the Northside Centers, Inc., a local community mental health center. He has also provided supervision to fellows in child psychiatry at the University of South Florida. So, Harris, what...
Let me just add also, mm-hmm. I'm a father of two sons that are teenagers, and that's probably my best qualification, because I probably got the best training in terms of learning how to be a father.
Real-life experience.
Absolutely. It's always the best.
Can you give our listeners just an overview, say in... You know, just a minute or so of parenting your teenager.
Parenting your teenager. Well, I think one of the things one needs to keep in mind when you parent your teenagers is it's probably one of the most challenging and demanding tasks you'll have in being a parent. They're a lot like toddlers in the fact that they're always changing. As soon as you think that you understand something that they're going through and experiencing and exchanging with you, and you think now you've got it down, just like toddlers, they're moving on and very quickly challenging you again in other areas. The difference, I guess, with the adolescents is because they have such a verbal ability and such a cognitive ability to abstract concepts and to exchange with you. Many times we have a tendency to assume that they're a lot more emotionally mature than they really are. So while the cognitive side of life is really kicking in, emotionally they're still continuing to develop, and they need us both to set guidelines as well as limits to their impulses to help them grow into young, healthy adults.
Wow. Excellent. And again, for all those listeners who have kids or those that don't have kids but nevertheless have interest and questions on this topic, and even parenting your younger children, as Harris is an expert on child as well as adolescents, please call in 289-1860. That's 289-1860 for Hillsborough County. Everywhere else, it is 877. This is toll free now, 877-969-8600. And going back to the topic, a friend of mine who a few years older than I, who had kids prior than I did or have now, mentioned from his perspective that it was important to evolve with your kids. And you mentioned how the kids change so rapidly. And I guess as a parent, what's your view on a parent being able to also evolve with as your kids grow?
Well, I think that's a good point. I think being able to keep in mind that they're no longer little, and they've got a history now with you that has gone on for a time, you can't do the same things that you used to do before in terms of being able just to sometimes just say no, though eventually one does have to do that and set firm limits, but that one has to be able to engage with them in a dialogue where in the past you probably felt like you didn't have to. So in many ways, they bring you along and they teach you. Certainly they teach you about the music, the culture, the television, all the different aspects of the technological, cellular, text, tweeter services that are now, you know, in the forefront of their communication.
Right.
And so you have to make sure that you stay current with what they're current with. In my own practice, one of the things I'm always doing is making sure that I understand all the movies, all the television, all the TV shows and so forth that they're involved with, because this is where they get a great deal of their information, even much more so than years past. Years past, when I was a kid, we had television and that was or the radio, and that was pretty much it.
So it's important to get into their world, as it were.
That's it. Excellent way to put it. Yes, you have to be able to be in their world, immerse yourself in the world of theirs, even when sometimes they don't want you to, you know, because they want to keep all these things for themselves. You're not trying to be cool. You're not trying to be with it, but you're trying to be curious. And I think even though kids protest all the time when they say they don't want you to know about that, or they don't want you to learn about that, or they don't want you to wear that kind of clothing, or they don't want you to use that kind of jargon, on a deeper level, they know that you're interested. And, you know, you have to continue to let the kids know how interested you are. They need you as much as ever in adolescence as they did when they were much younger.
Even though they may not admit it.
Absolutely, absolutely, because they can get into a lot more difficulty if left to their own devices. And while they certainly can think about things in new ways, yet at the same time, they need to be able to bounce ideas off of you.
Mm-hmm. And so, of course, everyone has been through the experience that when kids get to be a certain age, and I don't know, 10, 12 maybe, they start to not even want to walk next to mom and dad in the mall and so forth. And I guess that's a normal process of growing up and trying out one's wings and developing independence early on. Is that?
Oh, yes. I think when they get into the adolescent development and they start to try to figure out who they are, both sexually, separate from the family, their own new identity, one of the things that they need to do is they need to be able to separate and individuate all over again. And what happens with kids is that they really feel like there's sort of an unconscious audience that's always following them around. There's an audience that's always looking at them, watching them, observing them, because this is how they think about themselves. So the concept of, you know, being an offspring, a child of parents, is abhorrent to them on some level because they're trying so hard. I think the point here is the ability of the parent to let the child separate and walk a few paces ahead or not hold the hand or be dropped off a block as long as it's safely before they get to school. All of that allows the child to be able to feel more independent and yet still have some sort of attachment with the parent.
So this is actually a good thing, and parents shouldn't feel that there's something wrong if their child exhibits an interest in walking, you know, a few yards separate from mom and dad at that point in their development?
Oh, absolutely, because what you want to do is you want to promote their sense of independence and their sense of competence to be able to handle things in the world with some support, but also an ability to go out, just like they did when they were toddlers, were learning to walk. You know, you let them fall, you let them pilk themselves up and move on without undermining their attempts.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. What's the difference, Harris, between puberty and adolescence?
Well, that's a good question. Puberty is actually the biologic process which allows kids to grow into sexual mature adults. Nowadays, it seems to be occurring much, much younger than it did before. There's a lot of theories about that. Diet, environment, health, promotion all help children to develop a lot earlier in terms of these sexual characteristics. Adolescence is more of a psychological process in which the children start to develop a sense cognitively, psychologically, of being growing into young adulthood. Puberty does have significant markers for different stages and when it ends, whereas in adolescence, I think it seems to go on much longer, even than we used to think 10, 15 years ago. We now know that the adolescent brain actually doesn't mature and form all the normal synapses, those connections between brain cells that allow them to exert executive function and be able to control their impulses into the early and mid-20s. So adolescence is much more open-ended.
Does adolescence always begin after puberty begins?
Well, it's about at the same time. They both sort of start at the same time, whereas puberty is much more biologically driven. It's much more hormonally driven, and we see the physical changes with the axillary hair, pubic hair, changes in the sizes and shapes of the genitalia, and in the physical stature. Whereas the psychological aspects of adolescence, you know, as many parents say to me, I just don't see it. I don't know what they're thinking.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and come right back. Call us with your questions. 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsboro, elsewhere, 877-969-8600. We'll be right back.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. As President Barack Obama marked his first 100 days in office, the Salem team of syndicated hosts headed out on an unprecedented 12-city tour. Obama, the first 100 days. I was joined by Bill Bennett, Michael Medved, Mike Gallagher, and of course, Dennis Prager. On the heels of this very fun, successful series of events, a special release DVD is now available at townhallstore.com. You can see the video footage of the best moments from our one tour and with your favorite Salem talent on Obama, the first 100 days. Some of us waxed eloquent.
Remember, a mark of civilization is what you will stand for. Another mark of civilization is what you will not stand for.
And we had a few laughs.
Hey, kid, are you a schmuck?
We also talked about the economic crisis, the dramatic growth of government spending, and the ongoing threats to our country from terrorists and terror-sponsoring regimes like Iran.
For just $19.95, you can order your copy of Obama, the First 100 Days, today at 860WGUL.com. That's 860WGUL.com.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with a doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're discussing parenting your teenager as well as your child, if your younger child, if you all have younger children, with and you have questions on that. And my guest expert, Dr. Harris Feinstein. Okay, Harris, let me ask you about the, and we may have touched on this earlier, about the parents with a teenager who they feel they used to be very close to their child, now a teenager, but now that teenager does not want to have anything, quote, anything to do with me. And I think we kind of touched on that a little bit as part of right. the normal process. What if that didn't happen? I guess that's okay too, right?
You mean if the child becomes overly attached mm-hmm. and doesn't want to leave the house or doesn't want to do anything without the parents?
I guess it can be too much the other way too. But
yeah, there's a balance between having a healthy attachment. My point has always been one of the best indicators of getting through adolescence with your teenager is going through it with a earlier good relationship. You know, having a close relationship with them, knowing what's going on in their school, knowing what's going on with them in their clubs, in their activities, being involved. That's always a good indicator of being able to negotiate because adolescence is difficult.
How about the fact that today parents have their kids in so many activities, just so many activities that they just transport, you know, each child from one to the next to the next to the next, and it seems like parents sometimes try to outbid the next family as far as how many activities they can engage their children with. Is there some potential problem with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that generally nowadays this could be multifactorial in terms of why people get their kids involved in so many different activities. Obviously, there's a lot more of a competitive sense in our society nowadays, and people are always wanting to get their kids on the forefront of whatever activity they're involved with. If they have a certain skill, they want to get them extra training. If they have a special need, they want to get them support. But it seems that in general, we're having our kids much more scheduled also because the concept of being able to play in a healthy environment outside, the kind that I was used to growing up in Charleston, South Carolina as a boy, is no longer around as much as it used to be. We have to be a lot more proactive in keeping our kids safe. So I think that's also why all these structured activities got started. However, the concept of play, being able to enjoy yourself and have fun, is something that we should not forget, because also the ramifications of that as we get further along into adulthood also can become a concern, because then we become very much involved with activities that seem to be all goal-directed but don't seem to have a degree of fun and enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And fun is an important thing, the concept of being able to still play. One of the things I always ask parents is what do these kids really enjoy doing? Because after a while, you know, if you're overscheduled, then you don't have time to find out what you really enjoy doing and enjoy the whole process, as opposed to the goal of being on the best team.
Which is important to develop one's self-identity.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is something that I also see in adults that come to see me in my practices. They've also lost the ability to know how to play and to have fun, because they are also overscheduled. They're either involved with too many activities at work, they're involved with too many activities in terms of their charitable organizations, they overextend themselves in so many different areas and forget to nourish themselves in terms of their ability to play and enjoy life.
So the two things you recommend for those adults are, number what, long vacation?
Not long vacations, but I think it's always a balance. It's always a balance in terms of being able to work, to have good, healthy relationships, and also to have good, healthy play. I had a professor once that talked about a three-legged stool. I use this analogy all the time in my practice, in which, you know, you have to work, you have to be able to have loving relationships, and you also ought to be able to find out how to have a good time in a healthy way. And if you're too over invested in one of those aspects, then you're not able to really stay balanced when life doesn't always send you a smooth surface, and you have to cope.
Good analogy. On the line is Debbie. Debbie, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you.
And you have a question for Dr. Feinstein.
I do have a question for Dr. Feinstein. I have a 16-year-old son, and my question is, how much do I monitor his social activities outside of the home? How much do I let go? How much independence do I allow? I want to keep him safe. I also want him to have fun and enjoy his independence. I just don't know how far to let the rope out, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Just for clarification, are you a single mom or married?
No, not. We're a two-parent household.
Okay.
That's a very good question, Debbie, and thank you for calling in.
My pleasure.
I think number one is the issue about the group that the child is being associated with. I think it's important for people to know who their kids are with, whether it be with the religious group, whether it be with the sports, whether it be in the neighborhood. So I think that's number one in terms of a priority, in terms of knowing who they're with.
Okay.
I think one has to be able to tolerate some degree of uncertainty and a little bit of anxiety and letting them try.
Okay.
They're going to make mistakes. They're going to fall. And being able to come back and to be able to realign, to be able to discuss it, not in anger, but in an understanding and a supportive way. They still need us to help them to be safe, but they also need us to be able to find out that they can go out, they can make mistakes, they can dust off their knees, and they can pick themselves up and try again. So I think it's almost sort of a process in terms of allowing them to practice the separation. Obviously, each family has their own floor upon which they feel comfortable, and some of that is that's multifactorially influenced by how we were raised, the family that we came from, the society that we live in, the neighborhood that we're in. So we always have to be respectful of what the parents' orientation is. But, you know, the adolescents make us kind of rethink how we did things in our own environment, and they make us anxious because they are growing up and separating also.
And, and, we'll, be, And we'll be, I'm sorry to cut you off right there, but we'll be right back with more. Debbie, hold on. We'll get right back with more on this topic on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Number 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsboro, elsewhere, 877-969-8600. We'll be right back.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff says he is extremely concerned by last week's deadly bombings in Baghdad. Admiral Mike Mullen tells CNN Iraqi leaders need to take control and ensure security in their own country. The Iraqi military says it has arrested the entire network responsible for those twin bombings. Today it broadcast the confession of one Sunni man identified as the mastermind. He says he bribed his way through checkpoints. The bombers did anyway to get their trucks into Baghdad. Hurricane Bill now taking aim at Canada. It could dump more than 7 inches of rain across Nova Scotia later. Power outages already being reported across Nova Scotia's southern shores. Some roads to the coast are closed. And investigators and insurance adjusters have started examining what's left of a Kentucky prison after a fiery riot forced 700 inmates to be relocated. The damage assessment could take several days. More details at srnnews.com.
Digital goddess Kim Komando here. It's the end of the summer. School's back in session. And guess what else is ending? My Sony PC and laptop giveaway. So enter now before it's too late over at Komando.com. K-O-M-A-N-D-O.com. Then when you win, wishful thinking, but you never know, you can listen to the show and say, Kim gave me a brand new PC. Enter daily at Komando.com.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're talking with Debbie and guest expert Dr. Harris Feinstein, and the question that Debbie posed was, how do you let your 16-year-old son exercise his freedom and as far as monitoring where he goes and letting him exercise that freedom by the same time being a good parent and trying to ensure that there's safety involved? And Harris and I were talking on the break about your son. Does he have siblings?
Yes, he has an older sibling who was not quite as social as he was at that age, and I didn't have the same concerns. This one is quite sociable and likes to be out and about and likes to party on weekends, and it's just, you know, hard to figure out how much freedom, as Dr. Feinstein said, to let him have that's safe and wise.
Do you have some guidelines or strict rules?
We do have rules. Of course, we have curfew, and I want to know where he is and who he's with and that there is parent supervision. He's starting to drive, so then we're going to have a few more rules probably. I don't want to sound like a tyrant with him, but I also, you know, want to make sure that he's safe and being careful. So, you know.
Does he go to the same school as your older child?
The older child is in college now.
I see. Okay,
but you know, Debbie, this does make it more difficult for us when we have kids that are younger and the older ones haven't been as social. Steve and I were talking. Usually, it's easier when the older ones have had us go through that baptism of fire of setting down the rules. Usually, you know, the earlier child has gone through some sort of developmental stage that kind of makes us feel stronger and more competent. But sometimes the younger one, because of their temperament, because of their own personality, make more demands on us in terms of that. The idea, Steve and I were talking about, if they were at the same school, obviously that would increase the ability of people to be supportive and keep an eye on each other. On the other hand, when they're younger, it is like kind of going through it for the first time. I liked your idea about being a tyrant. I would just change it a little bit. I always think about parenting as being like a benign dictator. You know, you have these rules, there are certain rules that need to be respected. They're very basic rules that I think most families know. And then there needs to be a flexibility for the child to be able to come back and communicate and talk and bounce the ideas off of the parent. To be able to create an atmosphere, if you will, what I used to call it with my patients, sort of a therapeutic space in which the child feels like they can be heard. I will tell you 1,000% that no matter the fact that we feel like we're not getting through to the kids, they hear every word that we say, and they really appreciate being able to let us know what they're thinking and what they're saying. Sometimes it's not so easy because sometimes they don't want to talk. And so I also think about setting up activities in the family that would allow for the child to be able to be with the parent one-on-one and do certain things. I have some families like to take their kid golfing, long boat rides. A long car ride is sometimes very good because the longer the child is with the parent, the harder it is for them to contain everything that they're trying to do to separate, and then they're able to start to kind of bounce it off. The interesting thing, I think, is that as they get from 16 to 17, things start to change a little bit. They become a little bit more comfortable with their separation, and then they don't feel that they have to work so hard to be different. I think if we can validate the fact that they know that they're different than we are, they don't have to work so hard at it. So issues of clothing, issues of hair, very many basic things that I see parents really struggle with their kids about, I don't find as much an issue when the parent allows them within a certain framework of variability to be their own person. And so that's sort of giving them enough space to be their own person, opening up the communication channels, and letting them know that we're available. I think the bottom line I always remember with my own son was that if he calls and he says, I need to talk, you know, I tend to sort of try to drop things. You know, that's an incredible invitation for a time. It doesn't always come at the best day of the hour of the day. Sometimes it's late at night or whatever. But I think when kids come to us and they want to talk to us, we got to make sure that we're available.
And also something you put your finger on, the one-on-one. And we've noticed that we have four kids, and mm-hmm. we've noticed that it's very helpful to have one-on-one time with mommy, one-on-one time with daddy. And because sometimes a child may feel more prone to reveal or discuss things with one versus the other on any particular day of the week, and you never know. But then again, to create that comfort zone at an early age, so that hopefully that will continue on as they get older.
Yeah, and to extrapolate in terms of working with my older patients, adults and so forth, most people don't really remember that much about what they were given physically or materially. But if they knew that they had time with the parents, it's usually one of the best rewards that they can get.
It's interesting you say that. In the operating room, I would sometimes ask people, what's the best thing that you can recall? What could you put your finger, and I would ask all the staff in the OR, what one thing would you say that your child would say was the best thing, best interaction, best activity they ever had with you, mommy or daddy? And they would say the same thing. There's not one activity. It's just the fact that mommy and daddy are there for them. My mom and dad were there for them, just being together. It was not the great trip to Disney World or the great trip to the Grand Canyon or anything like that. It was just spending time.
And let's underline that in terms of availability of the parent for the child when the child still wants it, because it is such a emotional cement that helps things moving in the right direction mm-hmm. and allows them to come to us when they really have difficulties. Mm-hmm. So you're really creating that, you're kind of co-creating this relationship in which you have availability, you have trust, you have confidence, you have to work at containing your anxiety, your uncertainty, and being able to have somebody to bounce it off. I know you asked Debbie earlier whether or not she was single or co-parenting with her spouse, and single parents really need other people in their environment that they can confide in, trust in. We need support. We need a great deal of support to parent, and it's a very tough job.
Debbie, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us today and calling with your question.
Thank you very much. much. Good advice. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Thank you, Debbie.
On the line is Angela from Tampa. Angela, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi. I have a question for the doctor. My husband and I have four children, and the ages are a 7-year-old boy, 5-year-old boy, and twins that are girl-boy twins, 3 years old. And my question is, our 3-year-old boy twin is a little different than the other boys were at that age. He's into a lot of things. You could put toys in the room, and he's not interested in that. He's interested in how the door works, how the lock on the door works, the key, and just he's very intelligent, but seems to be very distracted with all the other things that are going around with
the other kids.
Well, if I'm in the kitchen, he wants to be in the kitchen, and if he's just hard to he's in timeout a lot, and I'm just wondering, is there something I can do differently? We did get a timer from something I saw on Nanny 911 that seems to be helping, where it says timeout or whatever, and then when it's up, the it'll say time's up or something like that, and it's something for him to look at and watch.
And entertaining him.
Right. It's a mechanical thing, so it does entertain him, I guess. Is there something else? And he's going through a little bit of a sassy stage right now, and he's very small compared to his brothers and his sister even, and he likes to basically just go up and just hit them or bother them, that kind of thing. He's a little tougher to handle than the others were, and so I know I have experience, but do you have any advice on something that I could be doing differently? Or
yeah,
good question.
It's a very good question. I guess one of the things that strikes me right off the bat is the fact is that you said that he's very different than the other kids, mm-hmm. right? So he's got a very different temperament to begin with, and he's got a different kind of curiosity than the other kids. So one of the things that comes to my mind right away is, how can we help him feel more a part of the family in his curiosity, the things that he likes to play with, the things that he likes to do? I would start to think about things that I could give him, whether it would be toys or other type of play devices that would actually nurture this side of him. I'm not sure exactly, and maybe you can help me with that in terms of I don't know if he's more demanding in terms of his temperament, or he needs to make himself more well known because he's the youngest and the smallest. But how do we help him to fit into the family? There's always kids that we have, particularly in larger families, where some kids have particular temperaments that seem very different than the other kids and make it a little bit more difficult to engage. And I think what we need to do as parents is we need to find a way to accommodate or approach them in a way to nurture their interest and to feel cared about in a kind and caring way, where this doesn't become so much a problem as it becomes a strength of his.
Okay.
I had a kid the week where the issue was that he was always climbing. He was always climbing. He was always climbing. And we started to figure out that there was the child was not being taken to the park. The child needed to be put in environments that were safe where he could climb, and he started to feel much better about himself. It wasn't so much attention about safety, but it was so much about, Mom, look at me, look what I can do and how proud I am. And the mom and this particular child were able to kind of have a better kind of experience together, which sort of bonded them in an affectionate and nurturing way. So my first thought is he's a different kind of boy, so how do we meet him where he's at? Not necessarily to see it as a problem, but maybe more of a strength. How do we help the family to sort of organize in terms of everybody has strengths and abilities and unique qualities, which I'm sure the other three do too, and how do we help them? And then you start to get more of like a family philosophy, I think, of we look for strengths that our family members have. We try to nurture them. We try to be supportive as much as we can. And, of course, there is going to be tension because, everybody wants you. Everybody is in competition to get some of Mom or some of Mom and Dad when Dad's home. And how do we reward the good behavior with the time with the parent? Like, Steve was talking about before.
Angela, is there any one particular thing that that your 3-year-old enjoys doing more than other things?
Yes, Dr. Feinstein, you were just mentioning about toys and things like that. What I find that he likes is, believe it or not, a lock and key. Something he put a key in and unlock, and then he can lock up certain things in the toy area. He likes that. He likes little boxes, like little boxes where he can carry around with him, and the lock and key goes with him to the restaurant, you know, wherever we go. And he seems to be really into those things, not really a whole lot of other toys so much, unless they have some sort of, you know, that kind of thing where he can figure it out, take it apart, and put it back together. But lock and key he loves. The other thing is, you mentioned about playgrounds. Because I have 4, it's really hard for me to get out, and that is a big thing. He doesn't get out to play that much. If he gets out, it's to go to the grocery store or Walmart or things like that. But he is starting preschool 3 days a week this week, so I'm wondering if that will help.
Yeah, you know, it will be. You'll get to see also how he fits in another social environment. He's almost 3, or he's 3 now.
He just turned 3.
He just turned 3 now. So what's going to happen is he's going to be in a program where, you know, if he's particularly bright and wants to be attached, and he's had the experience with the other siblings, then he might want to be more involved with the others. But he'll other students in his preschool. Otherwise, there'll be maybe what we call more parallel play going on, and then you'll start to see what kind of interaction he has with the teacher, who will be more objective because of her position, have a lot more other kids to compare with, and then we can start to see where his interest is on the continuum of kids at this age, and see what else he might get exposed to, what the other kids his age might be doing that might start to nurture other ideas that you could bring home, you know, and continue.
How does he, when he goes to the pediatrician, how does he relate to the pediatrician and the staff there?
He's absolutely quiet as can be when he's in other environments.
But when you say he's quiet, does he ignore what's going on?
No, he just sits there and does it. He's a watcher. He likes to sit back and just watch when he's out in the public. Mm-hmm. Like if he goes to a gymboree, his sister's into everything, jumping around, dancing and singing. He just stands around and watches.
And
he actually tries to find doors that he can open and shut and lock. So.
Okay.
And so, he likes to do that a lot at home. Actually, Dr. Feinstein, we've had to change the handle on his door so we could lock him in when he gets a little bit out of control sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And lately we've not had to do that because the timeouts with the little timer downstairs have been working quite well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've never had to do that with our, you know, other kids.
Now, going back to the pediatrician, when he's with the pediatrician, the pediatrician speak to him?
Yes.
And did they have a conversation or?
We went last week, actually, and no, not a whole lot. He's quiet when he's in that environment.
Okay.
How does he do with the other kids in the house? What does he like to do with the other kids? You mentioned that he's aggressive.
Very.
And the other kids, how do they handle the aggression?
Well, they try to hit him back sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And they, you know, he wants to, if he goes up in their room and if their TV is plugged in, because they have to have permission, and it's only for videos, he wants to do the plug, he wants to put the tapes in and out, wants to do the remote. He doesn't care about the movie. He cares about all the other stuff, how it works, and what he can basically get into and that kind of thing. And it irritates them, even though they love him. It's just, you know, his sister, she could sit and just play quietly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's more driven to interact, but it seems to be more of an annoyance to the older ones?
I think so, at least right now.
Yeah.
Unless, I don't know, there's a game they can play together. Even the matching game, he'll come up and just take everything off the table and knock it on the floor. And I think sometimes he wants attention, whether it be positive or negative.
Yeah.
And I will go back to this. I'm very busy in the house. I'm doing laundry. I'm doing dishes. You know, I also work part-time in my husband's office. So, I mean, he's not getting all the attention that probably he wants.
Now, is there a nanny at home or someone to help out?
I do have someone that helps a few hours a day.
And how does he relate to the help?
Well, we just actually just switched, and he's done much better. Done much better.
So he interacts well with the help?
Yes, after the change, yeah.
Tell me this. Developmentally, the pediatrician has thought he's pretty much on par with everything?
I think he's a little ahead of that because he's much of an abstract thinker, very abstract thinker. He has better vocabulary than I do today. But my other children, at least one of our children, had to take speech class and this and that. But he is just extremely, extremely far ahead, I think. And my husband would agree, I think. He's an abstract thinker completely. He will, you know, I told him yesterday that if he didn't lay down to take his nap, I would take his locks and keys away. And I would take his box away and everything. And he said, that's okay. I'll just go to the store and get more. And I said, how are you going to do that? He says, I'll drive. So I mean, he's just...
Yeah, he's also...
a big thinker.
Yeah, and he's also, I think, developmentally, you know, target with a lot of that omnipotent sense that he wants to be really big and strong.
Right, right.
And wants to be just like everybody else in the family. And yet he's not making the connection. I was thinking, actually, you know, we start to wonder about in child play therapy what the preoccupation is with the particular type of play that kids have, you know, the opening and the closing, things being in and things being out. And I start to wonder about, is this a boy that also on some level wants to belong more, wants to be more a part of things, and feels like he's not connecting, he's not a part, and wants to belong more. And so the goal here is how to help him to feel more a part of the family. I start to wonder whether or not the older kids also could help with that in some way. I don't know if they have any ideas or whatever about how to play with him to involve him at times. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's a very busy household. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own things that they like to do. And if people could sort of organize with time for him, would he start to feel also more a part of things as well? The oldest is 7?
Right.
Is that a boy or a girl?
Boy.
Okay, is he very nurturing?
I think so.
Yeah, because, you know, I also start to wonder whether or not the youngest would be rewarded with also some extra time with the older one, too.
Well, he loves going in their rooms, upstairs.
And the idea of everything is big and everything is wonderful, and, of course, he's been exposed to lots of things that your oldest one would not have been at the same age because you wouldn't have had all those developmental toys and so forth. And so I also start to wonder how the family would start to unite in terms of making him feel like he could be rewarded for what he does.
So if he has good behavior, maybe he could go play in the boys' room.
Oh, or play with his big brother.
Okay.
And would big brother be willing to do that sort of thing?
Yeah, he's going to have to just let him touch some things, I guess, because that's the problem. He'll go up there, and then the oldest boy will start to yell. He's going to break this. He's going to break that kind of thing.
Right. And so this is also
And there's really nothing that he can break. I mean, it's not like they have... You know, things, toys and things are on shelves and high, and he can't reach them, at least not now.
Right. But he wants to be a part of things,
right.
And he wants to be social, and he wants to get involved, and how to set it up so that, I guess, the interactions would be a reward for him, instead of always feeling like he's going to lose something.
Well, and I will say that my husband incorporated something recently where if he follows the rules throughout the day, there's little things that he gets to do. He gets to take a walk with Daddy at night. He gets to get the paper in the morning, well, every 4 days, you know, because each child takes a turn. And those little things, I think he cares about.
Okay, and we'll come right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We'll be right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Health Care Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're talking with guest expert Dr. Harris Feinstein. Angela's on the phone discussing her three-year-old. Angela, you still there?
Yes.
Okay. So on break, Harris and I were talking about the control perspective that, number one, he regarding the timeout, do you think that he's trying to exert control over the timeout, or is he still in a passive role? When you instruct him to go to timeout, he takes this timer and goes to timeout in an appropriate way, or is he kind of manipulating you?
A little bit of both. Like I said, we just purchased this timer a few days ago, and it's really worked well, better than I expected. It took a few days, but he knows that if he doesn't go to timeout downstairs on the bench, then he will have to go upstairs in his room, and if he comes out of his room, then he has to have the door locked. So he doesn't like that. So that has worked really well. And he used to really fuss. I'd have to chase him around the house just to get him to go to timeout now, and he would scream and fight about it. Now he just picks it up and goes. So I think he's definitely getting better with that.
So it sounds like to identify ways that he can incorporate himself with the older boys, mm-hmm. to try and identify activities, games that he can play with the older boys, the older kids, so he feels like he fits in,
right?
But he's not impressed with the video, you know, or the movie or the Disney movie or whatever. He likes that interaction, and to try to find something that can entertain or a way to interact a 7-year-old as well as a 3-year-old in a way that's acceptable to everybody.
Yeah, I just had another thought, Angela, about the idea about what does he like to do with you. What you mentioned, I know earlier you said he likes to go to the kitchen with you.
Well, yeah, he likes to, actually, he'll sit up in his high chair when I'm making dinner and just watch me in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
He would like it better if he could be doing everything in the kitchen.
Right,
making
right. But I make a deal with him, and I tell him that that's what you have to do. And, I mean, he will remind you. Here's something else, Doctor. He has a real obsession for, like, if something's not completely shut, he cannot rest until it's shut.
Like a door or a
drawer?
A drawer.
If I say I'm going to get something out of the fridge and I forget about it, he'll remind me, Mom, you didn't get the whatever. We call him notebook sometimes because he does remember so much.
And he's very observant, you
right.
said.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But you know what? I would also start to think about activities that could be a reward just for you and him.
Okay.
This sounds like a boy that really wants to be involved and he wants to be attached. And I think you have to look for opportunities of things that he enjoys to do with you.
Okay.
In particular, you know, it's interesting. Right away I started thinking about cooking classes with you. But I know he's too little for that. But the idea that mm-hmm. he could start to do things with Mom,
right.
just he and Mom, and even if it was messy or it wasn't so neat, things that he could do with you
yeah.
that would help him. Getting things for you.